have an opportunity during the tea break also to discuss some matters and answer two questions which you felt were not sufficiently responded to. So I'm going to give the general an opportunity with his team to respond. I'm also concerned and consulting with the members that tomorrow the minister is having a mandate, which would mean that the commission and all the deputy commissioners would be in that mandate and not in the committee meeting. So I'm respectfully requesting honourable minister members that we look at the program of the Portfolio Committee of Police, and my proposal is that we work late today. We finish program 3, program 4, and program 5. That tomorrow we do the DPCI, the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigation, we do the Civilian Secretariat, and we do IPED, which then means that there's no meeting on Friday. I put it to the committee for any objection, support, or objection. I think also we need to ask the general if the members of your team would be able to do this, if they'll be able to be here, and if we'll be able to manage it in this way. So could I first take the members? Any objection? You all in agreement? All right. Wonderful. This is a very good start. This is a very good start to the committee.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I have already issued the instruction to the program managers of Program 4 and Program 5 to take the things they come in. They will be there. I'm sure after lunch they will be here. So we'll be able to continue. Thank you.
For once, I respect the fact that you have a command crutch. People take orders. I can see, you know, they know I can refuse if the general speaks. So could we continue with the responses, and then we immediately move to program 3. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. There's a question I would like to take on the top 30. At some stage is talking to Sunnyside and is also talking to resourcing at the same time and the criteria. I think firstly, Sunnyside is not necessarily a crime weight station, but is a hotspot station. And the crime weight stations, as we see the top 30, is a combination of crime weight stations and hotspot stations. Then there's criteria for both. Like the crime weight, the criteria is derived from the profile of the station. And all the top 30 police stations, they almost have an inflated profile. Then, obviously, these stations, because they are dedicated police stations, they follow a dedicated resourcing. If I unpack the resourcing briefly, and I wanted to coach in the chairperson about Northern Cape, I think in the country, there's two police stations with the fastest growing profile, and that is Rustenburg in the northwest and Witbank in Mpumalanga. So I think the profile of Upington is also joining the trend. Yes, I think it's growing. It's growing fast. So, and my plea to the honorable members that as a visit station, it might be important to require profile information, because each and every police station in the country, according to basic policing instructions, must have a profile. And profiles of police stations these nowadays, they are rapidly changing because of the special development demand. I think there's quite a lot of rapid growth in the special development environment. And further to that, I think we are trying to get municipalities so that we work together. Like for example, if there's information that is not linked from the municipal profile into the station profile, then it means that station profile will remain inflated, but we will not be having the information. Like that, it's like someone coming to a police station and build a mall. And we had an example with the African mall in Gauteng. The only time the police knew there's a mall official is when a robbery took place. After 3 days, it was opened. Because then they called the police. Yes. And then we began to share the information. So there's information that is not getting captured. And some of the police stations, when we talk to resourcing and intervention, those police stations, when you look at the profile, you may find that that area, you need actually 3 police stations to police that area. So that's part and parcel of the intervention and resourcing. Like Haneju, there's a city within another city. So the other city doesn't have a police station. So the one city is trying to police the whole. So those are just the examples. So they follow a dedicated resourcing. Among them, then you're going to have hotspots. An example of a hotspot, in the top 30, you would see Delft from Western Cape. It's not a crime weight station. The profile is not big. But when crime takes place at Delft, they mean serious business. So Delft will compete with murders or compete with very serious crimes, but the profile is smaller. Then those are hotspot police stations. Then there was a question on the IT sector. Firstly, we do have an IT division in the South. That is what they call TNS. Yeah, it's a big division. But the CETA Act, we have raised it as a handicap to improving technology within SAS. It's not only a handicap, but it's also a national security issue coming into play. So some of the contracts, the terms of the contracts that CETA enters into, they tamper with national security or the sovereignty of the state. Like for instance, the contract we entered into with FDA. FDA wouldn't hold a code that lead to access to the system that is observed. But presently, they are able to shut them down, and that becomes immediately national security. So what we have advanced, and we've put this request forward to the minister, even, is to try and work out like the defense. So we're calling for this support from the community. Yes, and it's been long. Yes, and the more it stays, the more the damage becoming severe. Yes. Then, Chair, the stakeholders, it starts with departments. It's the requirement of the National Crime Prevention Strategy. And there are key departments that SAPS cannot do without. Education, school safety, social development, the moral fiber contamination. I think there's a challenge with moral fiber. And criminals are also investing in the moral fiber of our society. They go to an extent of sponsoring the education, tertiary education of certain kids. And they then produce advocates. They take them to court and defend against us. So the some of the drug dealers or the so-called big fish criminals, they come with 10 advocates just to fight faith. And all of them, their education has been sponsored by them. And some other areas, I think it happened in the Western Cape, they even buy them groceries to take the confidence away from government to them. Then they say, we want protection against the police. And that area becomes a no-go area for the police. If they come in, they get attacked. So those are what we want to change pertaining to the moral fiber. That's why community policing becomes so important. The police induction on patriotism, I wanted to read, just to spell out the turnaround vision. I spoke about it yesterday, creating a crime-free, conducive climate for economic and social stability, supporting a better life for all. A better life for all in the vision connects to the vision of the country. Then we have a theme on a journey to a safer South Africa that also talks to a safer Africa and a safer world. Then we have a slogan. The slogan is rendering a selfless and patriotic service. Now within the slogan, we have a formal patriotic education program that has been initiated. And then this patriotic education program is applied through the participative management core. We've got a junior management core which talks to the grassroots layer. Then the middle which talks to your middle level and the senior. But this patriotic education program is emphasizing more on the junior core side. So that the junior ones, they are the ones who get more education. So it's formal, it is very necessary, and then we are trying to enhance it, but we will continue to intensify it. We also link it to the community, especially if we sing the national anthem. We always also call for community discipline, yeah, so that we get them there. Then the other question was the handed over firearms by the community. I think we just had a firearm discussion. Where was it? It was this year. Yeah, we had a massive firearm destruction. It was led by the minister. When firearms are handed over by the communities, then they are taken to the substores in Silverton for safeguarding. But to any other area that needs the measures for security, then they all taken to the central place for destruction. So that destruction took place this financial year. Currently, the minister has instructed us to work on the amnesty. So, plus minus August, there will be another amnesty, and we will be ready to receive those firearms and secure them until another destruction. Then the involvement of metros in school safety. I think the integrated strategy between us and metros also includes school safety, and that we are going to work together with them. Over and above school safety, I wanted to point out to the committee that we have a school safety policy which has been promulgated by government, but we did not have a campus safety policy. And we then now has called for a campus safety policy, and we're planning to have a campus safety summit so that we deal with these together. But in the metro areas, maybe what I need to explain is that the plans of metros, that is in terms of the police act, they are supposed to submit their plans to provincial commissioner for ratification. And we have emphasized that with them in terms of the plan, and we intensify the procedures. But we have also spoken to provincial commissioners to strictly look into that so that metros and then respond to what we're responding to. So, but we'll put more emphasis on school safety as we see it's emphasized by the committee. Then the outreach programs vis-a-vis the targeted communities. Firstly, I want to say the outreach program is a key focus area in the community policing strategy. And the community policing strategy, we decided that we build a performance management system into it so that we can look at the impact of the outreaches within it. So, but later on, I listened to honorable members with regard to the discussion of the indicators. And I'm sure here, I would propose that maybe honorable members, when they look into the strategies, especially the latest one, like community policing, the others that I've spoken to, youth crime prevention, they can also think of what indicators they will expect in order for these strategies to be effectively measured, whether they are delivering. And because we, from our side, we're interested on the practical interpretation of the four indicator categories by the honorable members, the input indicators, the output, the outcome, and the impact. What honorable members, what the committee expect of the four. And I want to agree up front, the majority of the targets we measure, they only center around the first two, which is your input and your output indicators. Most of them, they don't stretch to outcome and as well as impact. So I think that particular discussion for us would then be important, and that we then get the direction, and then from that particular point. Then I also wanted to bring to the attention of the committee certain contradictory indicators. And there again, we also need direction. One of the indicators is crimes dependent on police action. That there's an indicator there where we must increase the confiscation of drugs in the street. I think that confiscation must increase, then we are performing. But then we've got another indicator in the operational plan, which is linked to the OCTA strategy, cutting the supply for drugs. Now the one example, I think last year we had 9 drug busts. And one of the biggest was in Harding. We confiscated 3 machines that manufactured 8 mandrakes in per second. Yeah, 3 machines manufacturing 8 mandrakes per second. And then we confiscated their warehouse. There were more than 100 bags of mandrakes. And when we looked at that supply, they supply South Africa and across the border and the world. Now, if we execute that drug bust successfully, then there will be no drugs in the street. So what is the committee going to do? Are they going to penalize us for cutting the supply so that there's no drugs in the street? Because we must perform. We must have more from the street. I think that indicator is a little bit contradicting. So those are just the examples that we give in. Then we also at the same time speaking to our vision compels us to align our operational approach or policing approach to both your economic growth, which is radical economic transformation, and as well as your social protection, which talks to the social stability. But again, that's where, again, we need the support of the committee. Because if, say, for instance, they put a mall, it's a business, it's part and parcel of your economic intervention, they don't tell us. It would happen that the mall is at a hotspot. and they don't know. The same applies, there's quite a lot of other development that leads to economic development or economic support to the grand economic strategy. If they don't ask us or involve us, we can't tell them what's the modus operandi there, what is the challenge. Immediately they start the interventions, the criminal comes and they do. So that alignment is the one that we talk to the impact, because the one question that we want to ask ourselves is, after all these interventions, did economic growth or did the rent strengthen? And what is the social that is impact? Those are some of the questions that we. Then there's a question on police not knowing about plans. Yeah, the police are very intelligent. Yeah, especially if you ask them questions. Yes, I think they've got readily available answers. Sometimes we give them promotion, or we will pass by them. I greet them always by hand and I say, "Hey, are you guys happy?" And they say, "No, general, we're not happy." And they say, "Why?" They say, no, we're not promoted. Just point here. And after promoting them, you ask them how they feel. They say, "No, we don't know how we feel." Yeah, so, but I have decided to then lead by example. I said yesterday, I went out on a vision roadshow. I go through all the provinces. The same tasking to the deputy national commissioners, to the provincial commissioners, where we explain to them in detail what the vision is about, what is expected at the police station, and what are all these plans. So it's not a process that we will achieve on a short term. I think it's a process of understanding, but at the present moment, we are busy with that one. Yes, some of the police stations are filthy. I think we've taken note, and we will address that one on a serious note, because it carries the image of the organization, but it also carries the image of government. And then sector policing, lack of resources. I wanted to explain sector policing correctly. It's not a resource intensive concept. It's a concept that operationalizes community policing. So which then means with the resources allocated to the police station, those resources must be able to assist us to implement sector policy. But we are taking into serious consideration the fact that the police station must be sufficiently resourced in order to be able to implement sector policy. So the resources, the need for resourcing sector policy is part and parcel of the resourcing of the police station. Sector policy is not seen as a different one. Then the 2% reduction and the setting of low targets. Maybe I need to explain the reality to the committee. I think in the past we concluded on targets. Sometimes they come from the side of the committee on indicators, and then sometimes they come from us. But we never looked at the resource requirement to achieve that target. Now, as a result, if we do not follow a resource-based target setting, by the time you execute it, only then you realize you don't have the resources. And if you overspend, Section 81 of the Public Finance Management Act applies, then the AG Amendment Act has come into play. Now, what we're following is a resource-based target setting. So the resource planning supports the target, then we set the target. So that's what is going to happen. So if, say, for instance, the committee proposes particular targets to us, we would have to be given an opportunity to go do the planning, then we'll come back, and then it can be confirmed. the approved rural safety strategy, I'm sure is there, General Masemola. He will deal with it. Then the Farm Commission, we're asking the committee to give us an opportunity to submit a report because it wasn't part of this, so we can give that progress report. Then the last question that I think requires me is the one of changing from being reactive to proactive. I think firstly, for us to be proactive, we need to adopt a crime prevention approach. And I think the Secretariat convened a summit in Boxford. And then for the development of a national crime prevention framework. Okay, so that process is advancing, but we're encouraging them that we get it. Then it needs to be cascaded down to provincial crime prevention frameworks as well as local crime prevention frameworks. But the most important ones are the local crime prevention frameworks. Then I've spoken about the modus operandi analysis center. With the modus operandi analysis center, I think we made a demonstration on the 72-hour turnaround. Most of the crimes were fall down while the criminals were in planning process because we knew the modus operandi. So, and that's part and parcel of the proactive side, moving ahead of the criminals so that they follow us in the destruction of the modus operandi. Chair, with your permission, I will hand over to them to exhaust just a few remaining questions.
Thank you. Thank you, General. Honourable Chair, there are a few questions that relate to the environment that I'm managing. For instance, I'm sure Honourable Member Tara Blanche wanted to talk about the dog pin mark. Of the total number of firearms of the police, which is 1,186, they are 242,999 that are dog pin marked. The remaining that are not marked is 2,164. The reason why they are not marked is because of the firearm permit system maintenance contract which is not in place, which actually takes us back to the same issue that the National Commissioner alluded to in his introduction when he was answering the question with regard to the fourth revolution technology, where we are dependent on it in terms of as and when they are not performing, it affects us as an organization. There was also three questions that relate to the budget. Is with regard to the budget for border policing as well as police stations, and the budget, $45 million budget, relating to crimes against women and children. I'll hand over to the CFO to respond to that. There is also a question relating to victim-friendly facilities as well as the criteria for the police station where General Sithole will respond to that. With your permission, Chair, and over to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will take the question on border protection management, whether the 2 billion is enough. Our response is that over the years, we have within the allocation. However, in relation to the more focused attention on cross-border crime, this allocation for 2021 will increase above inflation, will increase to 10.10%, and we'll also see an increase in terms of 7% in the outer year. So we have spent within the allocation over the years, but with a more focus, there will be an increment in terms of other policies going forward. And then in terms of the family violence and child protection unit, there is an allocation on program 2 for protective intervention, as well as an allocation in program 3 that you will see when we present in terms of program 3. So for the allocation in program 2, actually for the project intervention that are participating out in this
seminar. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, good afternoon. The question with regard to the police stations and the station commanders entrusted with budget allocations and with regard to the maneuverability, Chairperson, we have introduced a financial reporting structure that makes provision for financial reporting on different levels. In this specific regard, we have a responsibility structure where the National Commissioner then entrusted a station commander with a particular budget is cascaded down up to their level, and they can manage that thing within a defined financial framework. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the question of the criteria for the establishment of police stations, in compliance with the Government Immovable Assets Management Act, the concerned commissioners will submit the user asset management plans that contain the priorities in terms of the construction of police stations that is based on the Western investigations that have been conducted. In some cases, it is based on the community demand. I think the national commissioner yesterday, when he spoke to the access to policing services strategy, he spoke about the issue of the community demand. But what I can also indicate in view of what honourable member has indicated around Moretele, we have distributed three mobile contact points to Northwest during the opening of the Maritani police station. We distributed three of them. They are utilized within the Makapansat police stations. So, but also this financial year, we targeted also to distribute 15 that they are still in the process of ensuring that service delivery is not hampered. That's in line with the criteria for the distribution of police stations. The maybe just to add on that is the establishment of the satellite police stations that also the National Commissioner spoke to yesterday, which is in terms of the prioritization to ensure that we implemented the access to policing sector strategy. On the issue of the victim-friendly facilities, at this moment we are handling the police stations in two categories. We've got devolved police stations that were devolved, the devolution, the custodial functions were devolved to the accounting officer of the SAPS. That we are managing. We have the non-devolved police stations that are totally managed by the Department of Public Works. Now, with regard to the non-devolved police stations, I can confirm that all the victim-friendly facilities are within the police station, because even if the building does not accommodate the facility, we do put the victim-friendly facility in the form of a park home that is next to the police station, in the yard of the police station. And the non-devolved police station, they are those that have the victim-friendly facilities. But at this moment, we are just waiting for authorization for us to put back homes at the non-devolved police station, because before we can put an immovable asset at the non-devolved police station, we need to get authorization from the Department of Public Works. So in some of the non-devolved, we are just still waiting for authorization from DPW. Thank you.
Can we can just add to say Oliver Road police station is not a satellite. It's a fully fledged police station that is receiving attention at the present moment. I think it was raised to us by Gauteng before, including the provincial government. But the same one of Moretele. It was raised by the provincial commissioner previously, hence I gave these instructions for this. Thank you. They will continue, Chair, with your permission.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, National Commissioner. On the question of the difficulty of establishing PFs in certain areas in the country, we do take note of the recommendation by the honorable member. But however, what the problem there was that those police stations mostly are sitting in area which are farms, and you have seasonal workers that come in at a certain time and leave at a certain time. But we take note of the recommendation and look into it. There was a question around how do we detect, how do we do detection at the borders, and also how do we stash containers. Part of the question is two more operational, which if I answer it in full, I'll probably make it as you move it. But however, we do have scanners in some of the ports of entry which we use, and we also have movement control system, which is a biometric that has been implemented by Department of Home Affairs, where people will then use biometric as and when they move out of the country. They are busy rolling it out to all ports of entry. They started around the Lesotho ports of entry and will be going all other ports of entry. So it made the job of the police much more easy, because the current movement control system is using the passport, where you have to put in your passport number physically, whereas the new rollout of biometric will make it easier, because you just put your fingers and it will be able to indicate whether you are wanted or not. And then there was a question around the rural safety plan. The honorable member is, in general, the reply is correct. He's quite well aware that the rural safety strategy has been consulted. It is there. It has been consulted with all the province, but it's not yet signed in the process to be finalized. So we will finalize this current financial. Basically, I think that is all. Oh, the 80,000 firearm applications that was raised. Honorable Chair and honorable members, the 80,920 is the number that has been finalized out of a figure of 103,205. But when you say we finalized, it does not mean we granted all those people firearm license. However, it is people that applied, and those firearm licenses were finalized. So a number of them has been approved, and a number of them has been disapproved, which I don't have the two figures out of the 80,000. So putting a target will be problematic, of course, I'm sure, as you are aware, in terms of the constitutional body for the right to self-protection of them. So members of the community, they apply as and when they wish, based on how we process the license. Some get successful and some get not successful. Or escape for detainees, we do have a plan in terms of how we deal with the matter of escapes, especially during festive season, the Easter. We do some reinforcements where we know that it's the period for escapes. There is a national plan that has been rolled out, which normally if you go to cells, you will always find it in some of the cell doors. And in case there is an escape, we send a team from national that goes to the specific police stations and do a review of what has happened. And consequence management is implemented where it is found that there has been wrong on the side of our members. But of course, also one of the causative factors to escape is the infrastructure, which in most of the time is not staff that is responsible for the maintenance of the infrastructure, but the Department of Public Works, especially at our courts, where we have these people awaiting the infrastructure sometimes, or the challenge, but that's how we deal with them.
Yeah, maybe honorable. This question was extending to correctional services. So I have engaged the National Commissioner of Correctional Services. I think presently we are working on an integrated plan between SOC and correctional services, which will include the prevention of escapes. Then there's challenges that we both gonna deal with, because at times SAPS will arrest dangerous criminals and the correctional services unable to absorb them. Then you must keep them at the police station because you cannot let them go. So the integrated plan is also going to talk to a balanced integration of resources, so that when we increase the arrest, I think they also have the capacity. The halving of the serious and violent crime within the decade is also going to be one other area that will require a high level of cooperation between the two, because you can shoot the arrest high and then they can't absorb, then they resort to parole or other forms. And the same applies to NPA and justice. We've agreed with the new head of NPA to have an integrated plan together with justice that we can escalate to the cluster, because it doesn't help we push high, then they push low because they cannot job. Thank you. The other questions were supposed to be answered by the presenter.
Number
Chair,
thank you. The questions that were raised that relates to the target setting process, etc., the first one, and I agree with the question that was raised. In some instances, there are a couple of indicators when you look at the previous year's performance and the estimated performance and the target that we currently have, it's they do not really reconcile, and that attributes to, or that is attributed to a number of factors, which I think in future we will have to explain in detail when we do our presentation. For instance, you will find that with the recovery of firearms, if you look at the target that we set, it seems that we now have a lower target than the performance that we recorded in a specific financial or the baseline financial year. But for instance, in that case, in terms of the audit finding that were made, we were advised by AGSA that the actual performance that we published in the annual report was an overstatement of performance because of the findings that they made. In that specific financial year, the SAPS went through quite a comprehensive exercise to clear out our SAP fit or the exhibit stores, to make sure that the exhibits are being dealt with in terms of the prescript, specifically firearms. And during that specific period in time, a number of firearms were identified that were not properly dealt with in terms of the exhibit management system. They were then processed on the system, and consequently with the data that came through in terms of recoveries was higher than the actual number of firearms recovered, because it was actually older firearms that were in the stores that were never the circulation of the firearm was never cancelled. Madam Chair, that is one of the factors. One of the other factors that contributes to this is the annual performance plan of the SAPS is submitted in three phases. Our first draft must be submitted by the end of next month. Now, that means that we are expected to set targets while we actually only have three-month information on the current financial year. And that complicates it, because you don't have accurate information that you can use. Roughly when we get to the end of November, December, where we have 9 months, it becomes easier. But yet the protocol that we follow is that if you do not have accurate information, you revert back to the target. But honourable member, we take note and we are currently addressing that to make sure that in future that we don't have that same mistake, that we implement measures. You know, there are methods to calculate, estimated performance, and rather apply that than reverting back to your original target. The addendums, when will they be available? Honourable Chair, if I may ask, we got 30 days from DPME to respond to their proposed targets as far as the NDP is concerned. So that is, I think the target date is middle July or the 20th of July. So that means we will have to take that into consideration and then get approval. With the permission of my national commissioner, it seems that we will round about by the middle of August be in a position to table the addendums to the targets that we've indicated. Cannot set targets that are lower than previous performance. Why is it happening? It cannot lead to regression. It's noted, honourable members, there are reasons associated with that we might also have to explain in future. For instance, one environment, it's one of the reasons is the one that I stated, that we actually have overstatement of performance in the previous years, as well as the fact that the previous committee, in some instances, they advised us to revisit targets, specifically the ones at the time within the detective service environment that, according to our submissions, were initially set too high, and we had to reconsider those targets and align or apply the criteria to make sure that they are actually achievable. Madam Chair, you've asked a very important question, and I think we need to be honest from the onset. You asked, have there been any material findings on the indicators? In all honesty, the performance information, and I'm not talking about the financial statements, I'm talking about what we are presenting now. We have had a number of material findings over the last 2 years. And we've implemented efforts to try and reduce that. We are seeing a difference, but it's not where we would like it to be. I believe, I don't want Madam Chair to be, Honourable Chair to be surprised when you are briefed by AGSA. There are certain problems as far as material findings are concerned.
Honourable Chair, I think the last part, there was an initiative or a proposal by one of the honourable members of a joint committee. What we would like to put it from our side, I think last financial year, we actually proposed to the PCOP an inter-committee in intervention. So I think we would like maybe to support the initiative, but it's a clear initiative that can be undertaken by the committee itself. Where it is going to assist us, we had sometimes mandate issues pertaining to overlapping priorities. Like, for instance, there's matters where we're reporting to the Joint Standing Committee. Such matters is not easy to report to any committee because it's matters that relate to security, national security matters, and they talk to the requirement of the Strategic Intelligence Act. Now, firstly, we would appear before SCOPA, and SCOPA questions us about the budget of the Secret Service, and it's not public funds. It's not classified as such because it's not part of the PNFA. Now we're reporting to the Joint Standing Committee. So our suggestion then, again, to a large extent, we have to report to this committee. To account this committee, then the Joint Standing Committee. Then we find ourselves in the middle of three committees. The one committee demands this and the other, and then maybe our committee is not even involved. So that's why we're going to support the inter-community interactions, and we therefore support this particular initiative. But there's also overlapping priorities and performance indicators. Thank you, Chair.
Do we have any further responses?
There was a final one on biometrics. We wanted fingerprints. We wanted the General Mangale just to confirm it.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. We do have a biometric system in the police that is primarily based on fingerprints. General Masemola earlier alluded to the fact that wanted are detected at border gates. One way that it is detected is through fingerprints, which shows that there is interoperability between the two departments that would be using the movement control. We were responsible for circulating, and because of the biometrics, we are able to identify. Well, just confirming that there is a database and that the impact can be felt through the arrest at border gates. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Member Blanche.
Chairperson, sorry, forgive me. I forgot something very important, and that is about the policing of the trains, the railway, blah, blah, blah. Especially here in the Western Cape, it's really a very serious issue. And I just want to ask the question that how are we going to address this issue? What has police got in mind? Because at the moment, you know, you don't really see a lot of police officials on trains and at stations, blah, blah, blah. And I'm not quite often there, General, but I've been there.
Thank you, Chairperson.
I have another
hand.
Yes, we will go down the line for the second round of questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mostly it's not per se as questions, but maybe comments and maybe recommendations that we can make when we have our internal maybe joint committee, the other committees. I agree with General, maybe they won't be able to disclose information in other committees. Maybe it's something that we can run through, because it's not an operational process that we want to know. In terms of, I think my question was on, that is why I asked on stakeholders, because I needed to know then what is it that, what role can we play as this committee in making sure that their indicators or their function is a smooth ride. So I noted a few, Chairperson, and also I noted that General spoke of stakeholders of education and social development. I think maybe we should also, because it's in their strategic document, also include economic development. Because once you speak of advocates that would go out once they will go maybe and stand with criminals in terms of advocating for them. Maybe we can have that discussion and have recommendations to different departments, that then how do we make sure that the government will also absorb all the young people that they've funded to go to institutions and now they've got qualifications, and then how does the government then benefit from them in terms of absorbing into government, because government, the justice system needs advocates. If these advocates that are funded by government, they go and and help criminals defend, yes, defend criminals, then that is where maybe the problem will start. But I just wanted to say that maybe it should be as a committee chair that we engage other departments in here so that we have a joint committee, maybe without without them, because we don't need an operational process in the noon, but we just want to go through their KPIs and compare with them, with these KPIs, and see how then can we work together and how can they also help in terms of making sure that the indicators of the police come through. And also, on the issue of biometric, I just wanted to check, Chairperson, because if this is what is happening, I wanted to check, is it available in all borders that are connected to South Africa? One. Number two, if we come through a car, do they check all of us in the car that we are safe, we are fine? And number three, how do they detect a non-South African who did not disclose when coming into South Africa that they are here and then they've got fingerprints? How then do they detect that person who's going outside, that person is a criminal, because already they don't have their fingerprints? I'm sure the biometric will work only maybe if you are a South African or so forth. I don't know, because they work together with Home Affairs. I just wanted to check on those three. Does the biometric work in terms of all these three questions that I've asked? Thank you.
Before Honorable Member McGugin asked that question, Honorable Member, your question is very operational. So, Honorable Member Majozi, please, I do not answer your question completely. Please understand that you've asked a very operational question. Could I then take Honorable Member Mopokin and then I've noted Honorable Member Mahanya.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I just want to request that maybe on the first report that we have given on provinces, the breakdown on resources, that it can be available for us. That is one that one will request to get it. And the second part will be also to get a report on the police stations that actually were a business of public works. And they are, some of them are dilapidated, some of them are not finished, some of them are actually even vandalized. We can report about police stations that are there, but we don't talk about the challenges that the public works is actually impacting on itself. But the other thing is that I would like maybe General to educate me, and maybe it's not today, what do you call a police station? And I will really challenge you when it comes to Oliver and Bosch. It's not a police station. We can talk about it. I've been there, I've been frustrated. You don't even have a cell for 10 people. Then we call it a police station. Let us actually be told or be educated on what is a police station. And that one I will not agree with you. Sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, Commissioner. The issue of the integrated approach, meaning the root causes, in particular the departmental approach, I would like you to specifically try and tell us which departments do you want us to zoom into, and specifically what would be the need. Your needs analysis in terms of how we approve them as well. And the other part is that on paper, a lot has been said and they seem to be convincing. And the reality on the ground is that I would love to see all this that we are talking about being implemented at the junior level. And there should be also monitoring and outcomes of your findings in terms of those police stations. Because they leave, a lot of them leave much to be desired. At the level that we are, we really hear your story, and it's quite encouraging. But the outcomes on the ground and the kind of society we live in, there are protests over and over all the time. A community is complaining about the performance of the police, how you deal with community matters as well. So we'd like to also assist in that regard to say, we need your monitoring mechanism to be effective so that we have proper outcomes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairman. It's just to support the comments by the Commissioner, in particular regarding the ICT. Am I correct? Yes, I think there was a decision taken long time ago that the security cluster should move away from data because it really delays. Sometimes they don't have that security understanding of the equipment that you need. So I just wanted to say that as a committee, we need just to support that they move very fast. Because, you know, if you go to SETA, it's better, I'm not undermining other departments, but we need to prioritize the security. That if they want to procure their things that are protected, that are safe for the security of our country. Because if they are not like that, you'll end up with our fingerprints in Mauritius or Sweden sometimes. So if we move away from SETA and procure from your own, that, you know, I just wanted to say that supports that.
Any further questions or comments? Yassi?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me start with the policing of the train. I personally had a meeting, a top level meeting with the Plaza team to talk about an integrated plan between us and them, because they actually explained what's happening to the train as more of a sabotage, and it's a subject that has got an immediate economic impact. So I advise them that maybe for us to have an integrated plan, they have to go and review their strategy. So we are in progress. But from SAPS, we have got the railway police, which we are also intensifying to focus more on the policing of trains. Then the other one which I wanted to relate to, let me be straightforward with the department that we need, and it's from both an honorable that is member. In actual fact, we as such, we cannot do without all the clusters in the government. We service all of them. But obviously, there's more departments which are a higher priority that impact on us almost every day. I've indicated education, I've indicated social development, even, yes, economic affairs also equally impact. But the one that has got the biggest adverse effect on policing, I'm not sure whether I should say local government that should say itself. I think municipalities impact extremely negatively in policy because they start with diversion. If things do not go well or service delivery doesn't go well at municipalities, communities get angry. We must divert police from policing to public order. And there are times when we go on public order interventions for almost a whole year. Now you must imagine running a Nyala more than 6 months. It's a capital cost. Yeah, almost. And you also need air support and quite a lot. It's an extremely expensive exercise. So once we get stability at municipal level, that's also where your economic growth starts. So we therefore also need SALGA. Then we also need, because Cabinet Lekhutla introduced rural economy, so we also need the Department of Agriculture and Land Affairs so that we can speak to them. We need mineral and energy, illicit economy. It's one of the biggest threats to the grand economy strategy because of illicit mining, and there's quite a lot of challenges there. Then there's other non-governmental organizations, institutions that we're already working with. One of them is Business Against Crime, and then SAPRIC, which deals with the banking institutions, consumer goods council. We need all of them. So we do not need all of them at the same time, but we need them as per intervention. So if the committee then could assist us to mobilize and also just preach the same understanding, I think we'll appreciate, because then it would be easy. The message that we want to be carried over is that policing is the foundation for everything, or security is the foundation for everything. Whether you want to build a school, whether you want to undertake any development exercise, or whether you want economic growth, I think a safe and secure foundation must be created. So that's the purpose of the alignment. Then I also just wanted to add on FITA, to add a more deadly an equal deadly policy imperative, the public works policy. It has also been raised on several occasions. I think it's more serious. You can start from Parliament physical security assessment that we do. I think the one of Parliament 2-3 years. And I heard one of the honorable members has been putting emphasis on biometrics. And then a physical security assessment report that was done 3 years ago recommended a move from card system to biometrics. So, and for all other strategic installations and national key points, I think that's where it becomes urgent, when a national key point is likely to be attacked. Like, for instance, there's two ESCOM national key points that can switch off the whole country if they're tampered with. So I think the one of public works is equally serious. And our view is that the budget for security maybe should remain with security, or else must go to the DG president. Then the building of police stations. At the present moment, we're trying, I think our minister will be leading a delegation, we're trying to negotiate with defense, because defense, they do their own buildings and other stuff. And at the state of buildings of SAF, 80%, they are SHE management disqualified. And that's how the condition is. and the public works continue to rent these buildings for us while they are in such a state. DPCI, they've already broken in, I'm sure, more than 3 times. And there you've got serious information. CI is in rented buildings. Some of the police stations are also rented. Yes. So I think that's a high risk area to talk about. So that policy change is extremely important. We can appreciate the intervention and support of the committee. On the monitoring of the outcomes, I think we're going to work on it. I think the minister has also instructed that that we establish an M&E within the police, and the inspectorate division is currently under revival, and we will be doing the job. I'm sure the other questions on the detection of a non-South African and the provincial breakdown, I think they will answer it.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. There was a question around if you check all the people that are in the car. Normally the procedure is you get the port of entry. Everybody gets out, you go and do your stamp your passport, and then you can come back to your car. You don't get checked while you are in the car. The biometric, as I said, we started, the Home Department of Home Affairs started at the port of entry in mostly where the super, but they are busy rolling out. It is not at all ports of entry. They are currently busy rolling out to other ports of entry. And of course, if you have committed a crime and you are on our database, when you go through there, you will be picked up. The problem is if you are a non-resident, you have committed a crime. Obviously, there is no way that you will be picked up because you are not on the on our database. Thanks. Honorable.
Thank you very much, honorable members and to the team. I would like to know if General Pretoria, you are ready to do program 3 presentation?
We're ready, Honorable Chair. And we need your full permission to run that recording. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, thank you. We are on page or slide 116. Program Detective Service, and they are responsible for the successful prosecution of offenders by investigating, gathering, and analysis of evidence. The slide 117 relates to the budget allocation or the expenditure estimates associated with Program 3. With your permission, request the CFO just to the specific slide.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Program 3, which is your detective services. This particular program is divided into 4 sub-programs, and it takes up 21% of the entire allocation. For crime investigation, for 1920, there is an allocation of 13.596 million. For criminal record center, there is an allocation of 2.734 billion for the 1920 financial year. Forensic Science Laboratory, there is an allocation of 1.932 billion for the 1920 financial year. Specialized Investigations, there is an allocation of 1.733 billion for the 1920 allocation. The entire allocation is an increase of 7.1% from previous financial year. Which then is 19.995 billion. The purpose of this program is to enable the investigative work of the staff, including providing support to investigators in terms of forensic evidence and the criminal record center. Included in the allocation for crime investigation, crime detection with an allocation of 10.688 billion, vehicle theft units with an allocation of 541 million,
stock theft units with an allocation of 6.8 million and family violence and child protection units with an allocation of 1 billion. There is a continued focus on forensic services, also taking into account new legislation. There is also allocation for specialized investigations, which consists of DPCI. Significant reduction of the DPCI, especially taking into account from 2012-13, and from 2016-17, the National Treasury allocated this particular budget as specific and exclusive. As I indicated, the entire allocation is up to 21% as compared to the entire allocation of the organization. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chair, moving into the sub-programs within Program 3, Detective Service, the first portion or the first sub-program focuses on crime investigation. Honourable Chair, I will not further in the presentation deal with the DPCI. I'm just going to skip those slides as they will do their formal presentation tomorrow morning. The first couple of indicators, Honourable Chair, relates to the conviction rate of the different categories of crime. These rates have been included as statistical indicators for the reason that the South African Police Service actually do not have control over the conviction rate. Cases appearing in court and the actual convictions, etc., is the responsibility of the prosecuting authority and the courts, but SAPS have always been requested to report on this. So we have conviction rate for the total category serious crime, we were standing at 88.64%, with the target of improving it over the medium term to 89% in the last year. For contact crime, we're standing at 81% conviction rate. The target is to improve it to 81.25%. Crimes against women, and crimes against women standing at 84.1%, target to increase that to 84.7% in the last year of the medium term. Conviction rate for crimes against children, we are standing at 81.62%, and the target is to improve that to 82.25% in 21-22. Contact-related crime, improving it from 87%, where we currently stand, to 87.66% in year 3. Property-related crime, 89.18%, improving that to 89.31%. And other serious crime to improve from 95.72% to 95.92%. As far as the conviction rate is concerned, Honourable Chair, just for the purpose of explaining it to the committee, it is calculated, it's a comparison between guilty and not guilty to determine the cases that has gone through the court system, looking at the two outcomes, what portion of the guilty, not guilty, was actually then found guilty. That is how the conviction rate is calculated in line with the methodology that is being applied by the prosecuting authority. violent conduct, your conviction rate for violent conduct, we're standing at 63.63%. The target is to improve it to 64.05%. The next one on this specific slide is the percentage reduction in outstanding person-to-case forensic investigative leads. This is a new indicator that has been introduced by SAPS with the aim to increase the linkages in terms of the forensic investigative leads. And the target that we set in over the medium term is to increase it to 30% in 21-22. The percentage reduction in contact crime cases dockets older than 3 years. This also is a new indicator that has been added. And the aim is to address the backlog associated with the investigation, specifically of contact crime, and the target over the medium term is to reduce it, the docket older than 3 years over the medium term by 14.05%. And then also further, based on the actual achievements in 2019-2020, determine further reductions over the medium term. Honourable Chair, moving to the indicators that we've included in the PDO tables. The first set is your strategic indicators. The first one is our detection rate for serious crime. For the purpose of the committee, if I must, can just explain what detection rate is. Detection rate refers to crime that has been, in simple terms, has actually been solved. That means the case has either gone to court, it has been withdrawn by the prosecutor prior to court, nolly prosecute, or we found that the case was false or unfounded. So, and that is then expressed as a percentage of the total reported crime, as well as the cases that are part of the broad forward system. So when we're talking about 37%, for instance, in the first indicator, it means that out of the bulk of cases that we investigated throughout the financial year, that includes new reported crime as well as undetected crimes that we brought forward from the previous financial year. 37% of those must either go into the court system, must go into the court system. We do not have control over the cases that are withdrawn. That is something that just happens based on the evidence provided. And then the last category is to look at cases that are concluded as being false or unfounded. Our detection rate for serious crime is 37%. The aim is to improve it to 38% over the medium term. If we look at the trial ready case dockets for serious crimes, and I would say what this refers to is what percentage of the dockets that are currently in the court system is trial ready. That means that they have been fully investigated, all the evidence has been obtained, all the forensic reports, all those type of reports are there. So the investigation is fully completed and it's ready for investigation. It will never be 100% because you will find, for instance, if I may use an example, when we make what we call a direct arrest, this means the crime is committed, I witness the crime and I arrest the person. That person is detained and the next morning the person goes to court. But the investigation or the docket is not court ready yet. So it is then postponed in the court system and it then comes back to SAPS for further investigation. So that is what we mean, is that there will always be a portion of dockets in the court system that are not ready for trial because of the reason that I have explained. Otherwise, if we look at the current status for serious crime, 84.21% of the dockets that are currently serving in the court system are considered to be trial ready. And the intention is to improve the average over the medium term to 85.12%. Then going into the respective categories, this is, you will always note, Honourable Chair, that we start with the serious crime and then we break it down into the lower categories. For contact crime, we want to improve our detection rate from 55% to 55.77%. Trial ready for case dockets for contact crime, we planning to improve it from 83.63% to 84.56%. Crimes against women, 18 and above, detection rate from 75% to 75.25%, trial ready from 82.11% to 83.17%, crimes against children from detection rate from 70% to 70.15%, trial ready for crimes against children 78.51% to 78.95%, detection rate for contact related crime 47.5% to 47.9%. I'm currently on slide 124. Trial ready case dockets from 87.17% to 87.75%. Property related crime, the detection rate improved from 14.43% to 16%. Trial ready from 84.8% to 85%. Detection rate for other serious crime from 36.75% to 36.95%. And trial ready from 84.63% to 85.9%. Detection rate on slide 126, detection rate for criminal and violent conduct during public protests, we improve it from 44.65% to 44.8% over the medium term. Trial ready from 85.6% to 86.5%. Serious crime at the and this is now focusing specifically on the high crime weight stations. These are new indicators, the detection rate for serious crime to improve it from 37.65% to 38.42%.
and the trial ready from 86.92 to 88.12. The detection rate for contact crime at the same category of stations from 55.96, the target of the current year 55.96 to 56.74. Trial ready for contact crime 87.92 to 88.89. And the percentage reduction, also a new indicator, percentage reduction in outstanding wanted persons already circulated at the 30 high crime stations to decrease that outstanding wanted persons with 10% per annum, increasing to 10.5% in year 3. Honourable Chair, I'm then going to skip the slide that talks to the DPCI as it will be presented by the National Head tomorrow. So I'm moving to slide 137. The first table is on page on slide 138. Now, this portion of the APP talks to our forensic capability, and the first indicator is relates to the percentage of original previous conviction reports generated, and the target that we have there is based on that 95% of the original previous conviction reports must be generated within 15 calendar days. So from the moment that we receive the request, within 15 days, we must provide the entity with the previous conviction reports, and the intention is to maintain that over the medium term. The updating of trial records of people that have been convicted, percentage of a result of trial updated in respect of the guilty verdict. Our target over the medium term remains that 95% of the result of trial guilty must be updated on the relevant systems within 20 calendar days, and the same applies to the not guilty verdicts, where our result of trials must be 95% must be updated within 20 calendar days on the respective systems as far as guilty and withdrawn cases are concerned. Forensic science, the percentage registered case exhibits exceeding the prescribed time frame is basically talking to our backlog. The target is that the backlog within the forensic evidence environment should not exceed 10% of the case exhibits registered. And that target, on all chain, needs to be maintained over the medium term, that over the medium term it should never exceed 10% of cases registered. Then the percentage of routine case exhibits finalized. The routine case exhibits, the target in the current financial year will be, and also applicable to the total medium term, is that 75% of the routine exhibits that are being dealt with by the forensic evidence, forensic science environment, must be processed within 35 calendar days. If you look at the actual audited performance on the first, we had a 69.53% actual result in 2017-2018. Non-routine or the bulk exhibits, that's where they receive, you know, a bulk exhibits and not individual cases. The target is that 70% of the non-routine case exhibits must be processed within 113 calendar days. The reason why there's a difference, Honourable Chair, is because, as I indicated, the second category talks to bulk entry, so that is more than one piece of evidence. Moving to slide 143, the percentage of IBIS intelligence case exhibits, 95% of the case exhibits to be finalized within 35 calendar days. We achieved 97.29% in the 2017-2018 financial year, and the target is set to maintain an average of 95% within the prescribed time frame over the medium term. Slide 144, this talks to the DNA analysis or your DNA intelligence case exhibits. We achieved 70% of the case exhibits processed within 90 calendar days in 2017-2018, and the target is set over the medium term to maintain 80% of DNA case exhibits to be processed within 90 calendar days. Honourable Chair, that concludes the program 3, excluding
the portion that relates to DPCI. Thank you, ma'am.
Honourable members, you take the first round of questions. Lunch is not ready yet, so could I take the first round of questions? Honourable members, we got nothing from you. I don't see. Oh, I see Honourable Member Mofokeng and James at lunch. Honourable Member Shembeni, do you have a question? No? No question. Honourable Member Mofokeng.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think the first thing that I really want to raise is on the issue of the forensic. I realize that we don't seem to be prioritizing on the forensic and even on the training of people. And I can say for the first time I realized that the South African Police Services do have a skilled people that can actually do the work without even importing anybody from overseas. And I think the case at hand was the one of Mangena as a Pretoria case. And that's when one realized that we have to, but we actually don't focus on the best that we have to get more. And I can see the budget that we have here, it doesn't make those young people that used to ask me, can we go for forensic to be interested in that, because you are not having the budget and you are not looking at going to the schools and improve into it, because you'll never have the Mangenas again and the others. But that is one thing that I want to give you as a good feedback, but you are not increasing on those people. The part of withdrawing the cases is a worry for us. And I'm going to say it in this way, being a woman, a gender activist. You know, cases that are open, I look at the number of cases that have been withdrawn. You ask yourself that, I don't know, maybe us as politicians, we need to think about it. That people must go, the minute you go to a police station, to open up a case, you are using a resource. Those are resources. You are using time, and on Monday, you open a case maybe on Thursday, Friday, and on Monday, you come and withdraw cases. Cases are withdrawn on Monday, on Tuesday. We don't know whether loving each other over the weekend has caused something, but it actually becomes a problem because later that person will come again. Maybe we need to look at it and say, how best can we get that? Because those people come again and again. But it also goes to the protection order. I think here we need an integrated system between the police and the justice system. Because if you take people to the magistrate to get a protection order, they'll get it, and then it's finalized. They come again. They're staying in the same house with the same person. You can't understand. How do you get a protection order when somebody's sitting in another bedroom, the other one? And then the next thing is violated. Nothing goes. Some of the protection orders I've seen, they come without even a warrant of arrest because of lack of training, not only on the side of police. Police officers can get it back from the court, but you find the person who's having a document doesn't know that it was supposed to go with a protection order, with a warrant of arrest, until something happens. And I'm saying that let us check on a system that will make sure that if Jackie Mofokeng comes and takes a protection order, it should be on the system immediately when it's finalized, so that the very next mistake, whoever comes into my life and is an abuser, can be registered in Limpopo or anywhere in the country, so that we know this person is a serial abuser. Mm-hmm. Because a person will abuse in Gauteng and leave this woman in Gauteng, go to Mpumalanga, get another woman, that woman get a protection order. But you can't detect that it's the same person. And I'm saying that let us treat it in that way. People must be seen in that way, because we have realized that the abusers remain abusers, and they will stay abusers. So if women are not going to be helping in making sure that we nab this by stopping to withdraw the cases, because we are doing that at the expenses of our children and of ourselves. Most women that are killed because most of them, they are having 4 to 5 protection orders. Nobody should have 3 of protection orders that can't speak to each other. If I had one, you should be able to say you had one with them get again. So it should be known that I'm the one who collects protection orders all the time. There should be something wrong also with me. And I think that one is something that even if I can fight for women, we should be able to come up with a way of saying that protection order issues must be something that we finalize. I know that the Domestic Violence Act is something that is looked at to be reviewed. Maybe it will be something that we add on. But education, education, education. You need to educate people about the protection orders and also the Domestic Violence Act, because it's not a one-way thing. I can do it, but if you don't do it, when somebody comes into the police station to say that I need a protection order, let us have the do and the don't, so that people must not play at the police station. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, if the public, you know, obviously what they are interested in, they want to know the following. So many cases have been opened, so many cases have been detected successfully, and so many, you know, sort of convictions took place. That is the bottom line. And I do understand that we are dealing here with serious crime only. My concern is that, you know, really, I mean, that is not giving a proper picture of the effectiveness of our detectives. But even if it is, you know, 37% is not very encouraging, Chairperson. Going back to all reported crimes, you know, I was just wondering, what would the figure be? What would the situation be if you deal with all cases reported and investigated by the detectives? What would that figure be? You know, a while ago, some years ago, there was an outcry in the media about, you know, detectives and the training of detectives and, you know, successful investigations of crime. And I was just wondering what the position is now at the moment. Chairperson, then I would also like to know what is the caseload at this moment per detective, because these people were overloaded, you know, 200 or even more case dockets, and really I did a little bit of investigation in my days that you just cannot deal with such a number of, you know, case dockets if you want to do something, you know, particular about that. Chairperson, you know, the one thing, yes, is I heard what the presenter said in terms of that the police don't really have a role to play once the docket, you know, goes to, you know, obviously to the courts. With a proviso, yes, there is a role to play. First of all, you know, obviously, and maybe that is entailed, you know, amongst the lot that is so-called court ready. You know, successful detection or rather conviction is very much dependent on the quality of the evidence that is contained in that docket. The quality of the investigation, the docket that got presented to court is extremely, extremely important. And then again, even through the process, you know, the investigating officer has got a role to play in terms of, you know, also ensuring that the, you know, witnesses and stuff like that will definitely appear in court. Chairperson, then I want to move on to the Criminal Record Center. And once again, you know, the figures that we are seeing here is very encouraging. Apparently that people are on top of their work. I'm just wondering, you know, can we really say, or to what extent can we say that the Criminal Record Center, you know, has captured all the information, you know, relevant to ensure that we are going to have a proper record of all crimes that took place and the perpetrators and stuff like that. Jefferson, then lastly, on the forensic labs, you know, that is a huge problem. It used to be a huge problem, but you know, what we see here is once again people that are really performing very well. If that's the case, I'll be very glad to hear that. But is it really the picture? You know, you are hearing about cases that are delayed because they are awaiting, you know, this report that needs to be furnished. And I just want, you know, to get maybe some more detail, you know, is it really the result? I am not exactly sure, and maybe it's just in my own mind. Chairperson, the training of people for this purpose, my colleague touched on that, and you know, we have been losing quite a few people to other destinations, people that the government of this country spent huge amounts of money to ensure that we will have the expertise and the capacity. And I was just wondering what the position is at the moment and what are we doing, you know, to ensure the retention of skilled people. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you, General. Could you also dedicate?
Yes, thank you. Honorable Chair, the first question that I will talk to is regarding the budget, which I think the CFO function would also then talk to it later. What I wanted to bring to the attention of the committee is that this environment has got a historical under budgeting backlog. So, but when we had a crime detection conference last year, one of the directives I've given is regarding the review of their resource plan. So their resource plan, as a result of the history of under budgeting, is under review. The CFO function will talk to it more later. Then the withdrawal of cases, the part I want to speak to is that I think it's very difficult for us, the police, to blame women for withdrawing cases. And in actual fact, we discourage it. If the same applies, if a policeman chases them away and say, no, go and sort out this problem, family level, we fire that police. Yes. But I wanted to come back to an earlier proposal by the honorable member on the SARS network. I think the SARS network approached me last year when they had a conference to develop a gender strategy. So I think I would give them further directives, because after they presented the strategy, I made my commitment, including resourcing. I was actually expecting that they extended the interaction. I would suggest what we need here is education and awareness. And we need to enhance and sustain that particular program. But over and above education and awareness, we also need to have support programs. There are some of the abusers who are using the situation of a woman. Maybe this woman is 100% dependent and doesn't have any other means to live. and the abuser uses, exploit that situation, go and withdraw the case. Otherwise, I will not be able to cater for you going forward or whatever, the children, quite a lot of stuff. Those women need support programs. One day, one woman tabled the situation to us, and I think we learned out of it. She said, this man raped me, and was arrested. Then, I'm staying in a deep rural area, no transport. Then during the court day, the man passed with the police van, is at the back of the police van to court, passed the woman in the street. The woman came late in court, and the case was withdrawn, the complainant not in court. So those are type of support also that we need to. So I just wanted to talk to the support. Then on the question by the honourable member, I think it's a comment. The presenter used the word control, and the honourable member used the word playing a role. I think it's two English terms that have got different meanings. So, as such, we do have a role to play, but we don't have control. That's right. So I just wanted to correct that. Then what I just wanted to bring to the attention of the committee, and where we also need support, is the review of the bail laws. We are working on it together with Department of Justice, but I think the high criminals, we pushed them backwards, we took them to jail. But plus minus 40% of them are out on bail. And the highs are starting up. But there's a more deadly one which we are working on. We brought it to the attention of the governor. That is the bypassing of the appeal system by long sentence criminals. I think when a case goes to court, SAPS will present the case, and the suspect gets sentenced 95 years. The suspect goes to correctional services, and then file an appeal after 3 days. SAPS takes the docket, we file it final at the station of origin. The court entertain the appeal, does not test us. There's no provision at the moment, and there's no system. Then the judges are granting bail pending an appeal, even if we have opposed bail before the sentencing, because this criminal is dangerous. But they're all granting bail pending an appeal. There's no law that is very clear at the present moment. Then the appeal runs on magnetic tape, so the docket is not necessary. So SAPS will never know the appeal is running. Stretches from 4 to 9 years, it gets dismissed. The offender is given a 72-hour notice, must hand himself within 72 hours at the nearest correctional center. The offender defies the 72-hour notice, going to the door. A year before, this year, we had more than 10,000 such cases. But we ran a special project. We rearrested some of them, we took them back. One of them was already a bishop, so we found him preaching in church. So, no, just a sorry bishop, there's an unfinished business. I think I'm just trying to motivate the need to revisit the bail laws in support of this, so that the bail laws become complementary. The other questions, I would hand them to the authorities to deal with them. General.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. In relation to the forensic science laboratory or forensic as a whole, maybe we should start by saying that the organization at large is trying very hard to retain the skills that we invested in. And amongst many other initiatives is that the employment entry in forensic is at the level of a warrant officer and level notch 3, just to make that as an incentive. We are also paying them skill allowance as an incentive. Of course, it needs to be mentioned that most of the functions we are performing have other competing things in the world. And being better trained than most of the countries, not necessarily in Africa but in the world, we do have challenge, whether from explosives, whether from biology, whether from chemistry, or whichever environment of the forensic you find yourself, that you have to compete with minds in the country that are employing the same skills. So we, to a great extent, we know that there is that challenge, but we are managing it. In terms of the criminal record, I think there is a legislation that governs who must be in the criminal record database. And therefore, it will be improper for us to pronounce that we will tell you who perpetrated a crime, but rather we will say who has been convicted of an offense, who has been accused of an offense. And that is within the framework of the legislation. Of course, we are also not going to pretend that we do not have challenges. We do. And that is why we presented one of the performance measurements that we acknowledge is the reduction of backlogs that may come. And it's not as if we are saying we must have backlogs, but we accept that there is complex cases that might, you might finalize the analysis, but you need a reference sample that you have not yet collected, and for that reason you cannot issue a report, and that may go into a backlog, not because we were inefficient, but there are complexity around that matter. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Maybe Chair, we can just also add the acknowledgement and the expression about this environment. I think we are actually supporting and serving almost all the SABCO countries. Their forensic evidence, I think, is done here, Swaziland and all that. And apart from that, we participate in international conferences. So I think it's still moving. We're trying to secure, we still have the best. And please support us to keep the best by fighting for more budget. Oh, thank you.
If that concludes your responses, do you still have additional information to give?
Yes, sir.
Just from current detection, we can allow the general with your permission. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Chair, and thanks, Honourable Members. I just want to comment again on the withdrawal of cases where our National Commissioner has already alluded that we are discouraging our complainant of victims to withdraw cases. We always pursue the issue of the perjury. Sometimes we open cases of perjury against them when they've got conflicting statements. But most of the time, they do withdraw those cases. And then the issue of the Honorable Tarabranchi mentioned that 87% is not encouraging in terms of conviction.
but we must consider the docket by that time will be at court. And then there will be, especially from the defense, you know that they come up with some tactics. The suspect will bring this attorney today, tomorrow it will be then a delay will come from them. And then this conviction is for that financial year. So that is why sometimes we will reduce conviction of 30%. Whereas a lot of the cases have been put forward at court. So within that financial year, instead of maybe achieving maybe 50%, we will achieve this 37%. Not meaning that we didn't arrest more suspects or more packets are not to be for court. And then the issue of the caseload. The caseload for detectives, they will differ from station to station. Sometimes we work on a variety. When you take a station of maybe Gauteng or Western Cape and Cape Town, then Eastern Cape, you find that most of the caseloads are the same, but we usually work on average, that plus minus 60 dockets on him. And it doesn't mean when the detective, maybe the example which you gave that they've got maybe 200 dockets on him, it doesn't mean those dockets are not given attention. Out of those 200, you find that maybe 150 are cocoa cases. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. Honorable Chair, yes, we can tell these one final. There were suggestions relating to outstanding reports. I think it's blood samples report and the Department of Health. It's not forensic. And the retention strategy, we have it in place under HR. And the forensic is linked to the retention strategy. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members, General Stoley and your team. We'll break for lunch. You are invited to join us for lunch. Lunch is available at back. Whilst we are on lunch, we're still busy with the logistical arrangements. It seems as if people shifting around the flights a bit difficult, but I would like to thank General Kukole because program 4 and 5 are available to come. They will be here by or for 4. Will 5 be here after lunch? Okay. So they could be here. All right. With program 5, okay, and then we do program 4 at Oxford School. So we break for lunch, it's 22. Could I say that we come back at Oxford 2? Okay, we'll start at 22:30 Oxford. 22:30, thank you.
So,